This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Should be fun.
Donnie Brock is the design manager with the Seattle Seahawks. Born and raised in the South, Donnie was an early draft pick, leaving school to pursue a career in sports before graduation. Having learned when to push forward and when to protect her time and energy, this conversation travels through mental health, creating good work, and how you need to train others to give you proper feedback.
All right. So, Justin, are you at time.is?
I am.
We're going to go 35. That's a little thing we do. Just a little thing we do. All right, now I can go back to my document.
I'm so glad you gave up your singing career for this.
Oh, you know, I actually do have recorded songs out there in the world somewhere, and I will not publish those or tell you where those are. But we ready to rock?
Yep. Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Creative Sports Podcast. We have a very special guest for you today, all the way from sunny or rainy Seattle, depends on how you look at that. We have Donnie Brock, who is the design manager for the Seattle Seahawks. Donnie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, so excited to be talking to you guys today.
Awesome. Well, we'll just hop right in. Just kind of give us a brief synopsis of your journey to where you are today and kind of your background as a designer.
Yeah, so I first got started in sports with Houston Rockets. I'm originally from Houston, Texas, and I jokingly applied to an internship my first or second year of school, not thinking that I would ever get it. And then surprisingly I did, and I never really had the interest to go into sports in particular. I actually wanted to go into music. My dream was to become like a platinum winning cover art designer for Drake or Kendrick's next big thing.
Don't you have to pick one of those sides?
Perfect timing, Danny.
Yeah, and I have a side that I do pick, and it's Kendrick, period. But being introduced into the world of sports like through the Rockets made me think like, wow, I could really do this. I kind of was able to see how much like a sports team can influence the culture and like the community in the area, and I felt really connected to that. So then it was ever since that opportunity, I knew I wanted to get back into it. At the time that I was working with the Rockets, I also was working at an oil and gas company. And I came out of that internship and created a role for myself there as kind of like their art director and designer. I used kind of the skill set from creating a role there to land me an opportunity with an agency that worked in kind of finance and crossed the bridge between sports and finance. Because they did a lot of partnerships with the Texans. I also had a freelance opportunity with the Houston Texans right before starting up with the agency. And then, crazy enough, like the Seahawks creative director slid in my DMs like out of the blue after I had kind of like manifested it during the pandemic, and just was like, we are looking for a designer. We'd love to have you interview for this role. Are you open to it? And prayed about it, talked to my mom about it, and figured after really considering it that it was like everything that I was looking for in my next step. So yeah, I ended up here and I've been really like growing and thriving ever since. It was a big leap of faith, but I'm really glad that I took it.
I love that. So going back even further, at what point in your life did you realize that you wanted to be creative, or that you were creative, and that this was something that you would actually want to pursue?
I would say that I knew I was meant to be creative, like, since the womb. Like, I think that I truly feel that, like, creativity and art is a practice. It's like almost spiritual. It's divine. And I think that it serves something that's bigger than me. So I think that I was kind of like, I don't know, ordained is like a really big word to use to describe that. But I truly feel like that was my purpose when I came here. And so I've been like trying to explore all the different corners of what that purpose looks like. And graphic design just so happens to be the avenue that I'm pursuing. It was kind of the gateway to getting me into exploring my creativity in a way that I could also like sustain a life around. But I think, like most creative people, I could have gone a number of different paths. And I felt like the opportunity, like someone seeing it in me at the Rockets, is what changed the trajectory of where I could have gone. Cause there was a number of different creative paths that I could have taken. I was really into fashion at one point in high school, and I wanted to go to FITM and be like a fashion designer. You know, I wanted to be a civil rights activist. I had a lot of different dreams that I had growing up, but I always knew that I wanted to be successful in whatever I did. And I never had any doubt that I would be, which I think is very rare.
So did you, when you went to college, or, you know, how did you decide like what to pursue at that point?
So I actually ended up leaving school when I took the freelance opportunity with the Texans. I had to make a decision because I'm a very ambitious person. I've usually always had at least two jobs at a time, purely for the sake of like loving the productivity of it all and mm-hmm. loving like making moves. It just really fuels me. I'm very like goal oriented in that way. But I had to make a decision because there was no way I could balance the two. It was just too much. And I also had another job. I was still working a little bit at the oil and gas company while I was freelancing with the Texans, and I just had to make a decision. So it was either, you know, pursue the path now or get the degree that's going to help you pursue the same path later. And so my mom calls me an early draft pick, and she just said I got drafted before I finished. It's not that I even decided that was the path that I wanted to take. I think I just had enough faith and trust and intuition to not be afraid to pursue it. Cause I really could have said to myself when I saw that, you know, internship listed, I can't do that. Like, I've never done anything in sports. I could have done all that and had let the imposter syndrome like win in that scenario. But I really just said, what's the worst that could happen? They don't interview me. But I think it's more of like, I just bet on myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to dive into a little bit more of your influences, because I think it could come up later in the conversation when you talk about your musical interests and your interest in fashion design. How far down those paths did you go, or what did you explore while you were either in college or before? And to play that out for, you know, I guess call it a hobby, right? Mm-hmm. How did that evolve?
Well, I'll say that like fashion was something that I definitely like explored, and my mom was really, really, she was just super supportive creatively for me when I was younger. She wasn't as much when she was like, I was like, I want to do this for work. She's like, okay, now I'm nervous about that because, you know, of just the stereotype around the struggling artist. But with design specifically and like cover art and music, that was actually my introduction into graphic design. I started making all these like mock covers of like what I envisioned for, like what would an Outkast album look like if it was made in this way? Or like, I like to do like literal interpretations of cover art stuff, like the song Cream by Wu-Tang Clan. I made it into like, what if it was an actual creamer for your coffee and things like that.
Great
and
song, just kind of like,
yeah. And I was just exploring, I was just having fun. And I think I actually wasn't doing it for work, and it wasn't until someone said like they would pay me. And this, my first thing that I ever got paid for was a mixtape cover for this guy, and he paid me $25, and it was, I was so happy about that. And I was like, you want to pay me? I guess. Sure. Here's my Cash App. But yeah, I think that's kind of how that started. That was kind of how I pursued, how that path kind of came to me. But it was, I think what I think a lot of people are going to have to understand is, not being so committed to the outcome of something and like doing it for the sake of the process and loving what you're doing as you're doing it. I think that's what I'd always try to like harness that younger version of myself, whatever. Cause as you get older, you start to be like, well, it needs to be this way and it has to come out this way. And if I apply to this job, I need to get this thing so I can do that. But there are some things that you can't plan for. So you just have to enjoy the process and just do the work for the sake of doing it and loving it.
So you talked about the cover art and artists and music being an influence. Who are some inspirations that you kind of draw inspiration from a design standpoint? Like who are, like whether it's fashion or sports or... Like who have you drawn inspiration from to kind of, you know, mimic or kind of get your gears kind of going?
I would say a lot of my inspirations are not necessarily design people as much as they are like either like creative minds or people that are like committed to like mindfulness and self-growth. I've found that there's actually a way deeper connection between our self-concept and the way that we create and the way that we tell stories and the way we show up. So I really love Elizabeth Gilbert. I love watching her talks. I discovered her during the pandemic when I read Big Magic and understanding like the connection between like fear and creativity and how they play off of each other. I really like Joe Dispenza and his kind of conversations around, you know, the mind and how you control these different things about yourself. I love watching Will Smith interviews. Will Smith is just such a goat when it comes to vulnerability. So those are some of my inspirations that kind of, I would say that I currently use creatively, but there are a few designers that I really love. One of them's name is Shane Ramos. I've discovered him through Instagram. Who else do I love? I really love Outkast. I love like Andre 3000. I think his mind is just different. Pharrell. I love what he's doing with Louis Vuitton. And there's a guy who wrote the book. And it's got a circle and a dot in the middle. You guys can cut that piece out. What is it called?
Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
No, it's, he's got a long beard and he's a music producer.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. He worked on the Jay-Z album.
Yes.
What's it? Rick Rubin.
I think Rick Rubin, I'm studying him a lot right now because one of the things that he always talks about is like, they're like, well, have you ever made a song? Do you know how to play an instrument? Can you sing? Can you do all these things? He's like, no. And it's like a joke on the internet where he's like, I just really know what I like. And I think, and I didn't understand that for a long time until recently, as I start to explore directing opportunities, that like self-trust is one of the most powerful things that you can have. Mm-hmm. So he also inspires me. So I have a lot of inspirations.
It's great that you bring that up, and you know, May being Mental Health Awareness Month, and you're really like diving into some conversation that's good, because a lot of times when we're working for teams or institutions or, you know, corporations, like, it's just get the job done. And it's like, oh, you have a short window, but you actually speak about how you really tap into, you know, your inner thoughts and feelings and all of that. Like, how important is that mental awareness and health to your day-to-day preparation and how you approach things?
I would say, like, it's integral. Like, I have just learned, like, when I'm not taking care of myself, I'm not doing my job. Like, taking care of myself is a part of my job. And I think one of the things that I really want my platform to be is to start helping creatives understand that you do not have to sacrifice yourself in service of your work. You are the work. So you have to do the work on you so that you can produce at that level. So, and I think that is like the thing that I've learned the most. One thing that I talked about on another podcast was that when I am in like a creative burnout, or if I'm like having sort of some sort of creative block, that I've learned that there's usually like some sort of like limiting belief that I'm harboring or holding on to, or something that I'm not addressing. And it may not have anything to do with the work. It may not have anything to do with the design. And it is not until I address that and work through or process whatever is going on there that is able to flow. Because I feel that creativity is divine, and I feel like, you know, these stories have to be told. The only thing that's blocking it is something that I probably have control over, but it's meant to freely go. It's like a river. It's just going. Like, creativity doesn't stop. So I think mental health is like, it's integral. We have too many people who feel that they need their trauma and their sadness like fuels their creativity. And I think that it can, but it shouldn't dominate your life, you know? So, yeah. Hopefully I answered that.
Oh, yeah. It was a great answer. Great answer. And where does that, like, come from? Like, is that something that you've kind of been taught your whole life, or is that something that you picked up later in life? Like, what is that rooted in?
So, during my internship with the Rockets, I mentioned that I was also working at an oil and gas company. So like the minimum wage in Texas is $7.25 still. And I was living with a roommate at the time, and I just was like scraping it. So just doing what I could. I knew I had to do this opportunity, but it definitely came at a cost. But I was willing to pay the price. But the price was hefty. And part of that was my mental health, because I was working part-time for everyone that I was working for, I didn't have any access to healthcare. And I kind of made a promise to myself during my internship, when I was really just like riddled with stress, trying to manage so much, that the second that I had access to therapy, I would pursue it. And so I started that journey in 2019. And ever since then, I have just peeled back the layers of who I am. And I know that there's no end point of that. Like, healing is continuous. But each time that I find a new way of healing, I feel like I'm growing as an artist and I'm reaching a new level as an artist. And I think that, I don't know, I feel like we almost hold some of those things, those stories that we've been telling ourselves, like, so dearly, like, we hold them very close and very tight, because we feel that, you know, who am I when I let this story go? But who you are is someone who can write a new one. So I've been writing a new story every day, and I've just been wanting to tell like everyone about it. Even on my team, I'm very big on like advocating for mental health. Like, I had a whole little lunch and learn with my team about the different types of rest. And they were like, what are we talking about here? And I'm like, you need to rest. So yeah, it started in 2019.
It's interesting because we think so much about the act of creating without thinking like an athlete, where rest and recovery is just as important as the act of creating. How do you approach that more systemically or on a day-to-day basis of making sure that you're, because you said you had some times of burnout, how do you now approach that in your day-to-day life?
So I love that you brought up like being like treating it like an athlete, because I feel like that's where the intersection between sports and creativity happens for me. I call this year my Kobe season. There's just something about the dedication and like the art that is sports and like basketball. Everything to me is like, it is a form of art. And like the dedication that's required. And like you said, the rest and recovery, I think that's something that translates into the creative process. So one thing that I've implemented was just through this app called ClassPass, I have access to like all these different types of workout classes and exercise and fitness and yoga. And one of the things I have access to is this yoga studio who does like mindfulness meditations, restorative yoga, etc. And I went to one of the restorative yoga classes, which is essentially what they, one of the teachers affectionately called adult nap time. And it sounds really kooky and woo-woo, but it is the one time of the week that I dedicate to intentionally doing nothing. And there is so much power in doing nothing in a world that's constantly saying you need to do more. Yep. So I do that as a practice. And then what else do I love to do? Oh, I also like to practice doing nothing when it comes to if something's not working. I have learned that I think it's called like the law of reverse effect or something like that, where essentially the harder you try at something, the less successful it's going to be. And just even there's a project that's actually going to be coming out really soon that I'm really proud of. And it came together after a few days of me deciding not to work on it, even though I had the pressure of like, you need to do this. This needs to get done. But it's kind of like
subconscious, yeah.
Yeah, it's all about like direction matters more than speed kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I needed to figure out that portion. And I was like, running quickly in the wrong direction does nothing for me. I've spent eight hours of work on something that I completely like balled up and trash. And then when I'm really in that flow state, I can sit down in 30 minutes and knock something out. And it's like the best thing I've ever made.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I was literally just having that conversation yesterday about how as creatives, it's not always just like the idea comes and boom. Like sometimes it comes literally after doing nothing. So if I go and cover something, I'm not always ready to just recap that right then, right? Sometimes you need a little while. And having clients or all of that who give you that space to be able to walk away from it and then get to it is a gift in itself. So you obviously work for a great franchise, Seattle Seahawks. Talk about your role there and kind of the layout of being the design manager.
Obviously, yeah, the Seahawks are an amazing organization. It's such a blessing to work for them. I feel like the environment that I work in, first of all, is like one of the safest environments I've ever been in. I think as a person of color, that's something that we don't often get to experience, like safety and not feeling, you know, that you have to code switch or wear a mask to work. So I don't have that. And that's awesome. Our team, our creative team especially, is all about authenticity and everyone being able to kind of express their own creativity through their lens, even though it's like a choir. So we're all singing a different, same key, different vibes. And I love that about it. I would say that I do my role itself. It spans across everything across the organization. So I work on large campaigns like schedule release or training camp. I work on game day graphics, which may highlight like player stats or even just the stuff that you might see on game day. print that happens around the stadium. I also am the kind of design manager of like our team store that we're currently kind of rebranding. So I have a lot of creative freedom there. I get opportunities to be on set for shoots, and I'm trying to kind of expand into more of that role where I'm getting to be a part of the process from like concept to production to design to launch. But yeah, it's a really fun job. Our organization treats us like, they call us teammates because they treat us like they would treat the players, with the same level of, you know, love and same kind of food. They feed us every day. It's amazing.
Food's so, always a bonus.
Oh awesome. My God. It is.
The big like a startup, like the startup perks,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean, it makes sense being in Seattle, which is one of the, you know, kingdoms of like startups and like,
yeah, tech.
Yeah, tech and all that.
So you're going to say fish.
Listen.
Fish king.
I love some fish. How big is like your design team, and how do you all kind of approach like how do you divvy up the work for the design?
So our team is, let me see. We have a creative director. We have two design managers, a senior design manager and a coordinator. And we kind of divide it up currently by kind of, department. So each of us is kind of like the stakeholder of each department, and we kind of, delegate from there. And I primarily manage, like our community, our diversity, equity, inclusion, some of our, the pro shop, which is our team store. But we honestly, we, each of us touches different things. It's just, yeah, but that's kind of how we divvy it up now. We have a, I guess like, it's not a traditional team structure, but it works really well for us, because I think we have the kind of rapport with each other where we really are all friends. So, which is really great.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about the safety before. I bet that really helps being able to feel like you can be yourself, especially as a creative who, you know, we have to be more vulnerable than I feel like a lot of other business jobs need to be. So that's awesome to hear that you're all, you know, collectively friendly with each other and supportive. Is there a project that jumps out to you that you highlight? I mean, obviously seeing all of your work, the green and the blues and your layout is really fantastic. And maybe I'll let you specifically answer what your favorite project was, but one that really jumped out to me was the throwback uniforms.
Yeah.
That you guys did. Is there a project that you really latch onto that you think is one that you're really proud of?
I would say there's so many. I would say one of the ones is for the Seahawks specifically. This is a smaller one, but I think it has like a bigger, like a larger meaning. I'll give two. The first one is for, we had this thing called the Truth and Purpose Tour, which was like an educational tour that the Seahawks and a few teachers in like the King County school district were able to go on to kind of explore the history of like Black Americans and just American history in the South. And there was a foot soldier from the Selma March that attended with us. And I actually designed like the t-shirts that we would wear on this tour. And there was just something about one of the things we did on the last day of the tour was like walk the bridge. And it was just something about seeing like this foot soldier who is the reason why I have like the rights that I have today and responsible for making America a better place, like wearing something that I made. I don't know. It was a crazy like wow moment. And it's something that it was an opportunity I wouldn't have ever anticipated having through the Seahawks. So that was a beautiful experience. And I'm so grateful to Karen. She's the VP of DEI at the Seahawks for even providing that opportunity to us. And then I would say there's a non-Seahawks project that I actually really loved. And I just found out a little tidbit about it that made me love it even more. But I did this collaboration with Just Women Sports on this like exclusive collection of t-shirts for honoring these like legends in women's sports. And it was Cheryl Swoops, Brandi Chastain, and then Billie Jean King. And I was working on my portfolio project for this just to kind of showcase it. And as I was doing research to see like, you know, where it may have shown up on the internet, any publications that might have shared it, I saw that Dawn Staley was wearing it during one of her games and that Cheryl Swoops like commented on it and was like, this is the best shirt ever. And I was like, shut up. That's crazy.
Those are legends.
I was like, what? And then also there's a video of like Brandi Chastain wearing the shirt as well. So I was just really, really shook by that. So I thought that was just so dope. And it's like, it's just like these wow opportunities that you just don't think as a designer that you're going to get. And I just love that I was able to do this, like with Just Women Sports is like a women owned, like, you know, company. So it just was really empowering to see legends that I look up to wearing something that I made. So, yeah.
Do you feel like you were in the right spot at the right time? Or how did you set yourself up to be in the right spot at the right time to put your skills in a position to be used in that way to have that platform?
Will Smith always talks about like lightning striking and you just have to be ready. I think that it comes back for me to like always doing the work because you love the work, doing the work because you love the work, not because you need something to come out of it. Like all the wonderful things that have come into my life, I actually did not even pursue. They came to me and I was attracting them because I was focused. And what I was focused on was not validation or approval or clout or anything like that. It was like, it was the joy of creation. It was the excitement of storytelling. And so I think what the preparation for me was just a genuine, knowing what my why was, like my genuine desire to like make work that made me excited, that maybe affected people or had a reach that I didn't intended, but, or that I didn't intend. But I think that's basically what it was. But I'm mostly self-taught. When I went to school, most of what I learned was like the basics. Like I was taking history and math, you know, algebra. I don't even remember. But everything that I learned about Photoshop, I learned mostly on my own. And I had one graphic design class I took with a lady named Emily Priestmeyer. Shout out to Ms. Priestmeyer. She showed me like the basics and then I kind of ran with it from there, but it was just like a genuine hunger.
The NFL season can be very taxing. And plus it doesn't just start in the, you know, in preseason and end when the season is over. But how are you filling in those gaps where you do get a break away from games or draft and all that kind of stuff? Are you able to freelance or kind of how is that set up for you?
Yeah, I do freelance. I also like am trying to take that time to get ahead on projects for the rest of the season, especially like in the off season. Like this is like prime time to set ourselves up for success for the season and like really have intentional like storytelling. Like I'm really focused on like data driven creative at this point, and utilizing that in my process, not just for myself, but just for my team in general. But yeah. And when I do freelance projects, I'm pretty particular about what I take on. I really mostly pursue things that really light a fire in me. Cause I've learned the hard way that doing something that you don't love is not fun. Especially, you know,
no matter how much they pay you.
Yeah, man. You're like, yeah, you can give me 10K for this. I don't know that this is what I want for myself.
Sometimes it's not worth it.
Yeah. So I do creative freelance projects as long as they kind of speak to me. I'm working with a nonprofit organization right now that does a lot of work with veterans and active duty military, and helps them with like PTSD, and has like a helpline for suicide prevention. It's not necessarily in my niche, but it was something that I felt really like excited about, like an impact that I was excited about making. So yeah, those are kind of some things that I love, but I love all things sports and entertainment. So yeah.
Seems like you are a lot of these jobs outside of sports that you take on?
I would say somewhat. Sometimes they tie in some way, like Just Women Sports was another freelance opportunity that I took on. And I think it kind of fell under that umbrella. But I'm open as long as it kind of fits with like my interests, like my niche, and like the impact I want to make.
Yeah, it seems like your path, you focus on the cultural elements and what interests you, and you bring it in to what you do. So I'm curious if maybe it was a job that you worked on or something that you learn. Maybe it was the yoga when you were taking the adult naps. What do you take and bring into your job in sports that is outside of sports?
I would say this is like a really big thing I think most designers have to learn, is there is kind of this unspoken stigma or thought process that you need to remove yourself from the work in order for it to be like good, especially if you're in a corporate setting. But I feel like what makes my work distinguishable is that I bring my own experiences and my lens to what I make. So I think subconsciously I've like given myself permission to allow my experiences to inform my creativity. One thing that really inspires me that I didn't realize it was such a pillar in like who I am and how I create things is that my parents are actually both retired pastors. So I grew up like in a Black church surrounded by art, like not realizing that I was surrounded by art, like from the fans that we had in our hands, the hand fans that we use, to the tambourines and whether those had decor, or like the paintings that you saw inside, the way that the pamphlets were laid out, like all those things are a part of who I am, and it's a part of like the lens that I have and what determines what looks good to me. And so I don't shy away from that. I actually invite that in. And I'm always like reaching back to like that inner child who was looking at all those things and absorbing them and trying to figure out like, how can I pull her in, and like what she saw and what inspired her. So I would say like church inspires me.
Love it.
I pull that in. It's a little, my designs are a little holy.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with it. So you bring up an interesting point. You grew up in the South, in Houston, Southern churches and all that. How much of a cultural shock was it for you moving to the Pacific Northwest and moving out of the comfort of or discomfort, you know, however you look at that, of the South?
I would say there's like wonderful things about it and also like very daunting things. The daunting part of it was that you know, there's a lot of Southern hospitality in Houston, like, and just in Texas in general. I feel like there's a friendliness and like a rapport that you just naturally have with people in the South. You know, being able to check out at a grocery store and hear, you know, how you doing, baby, you look great, you know. And it's like, you know, so when I come here and, you know, you're in the elevator with like six people and everybody's just dead silent. They're like, don't talk to me. So that was interesting. And I also, I don't know. Yeah. Wasn't expecting, I guess, like the diversity to be so different as well, like in terms of, you know, seeing more people that looked like me here. So I definitely wasn't ready for that at first. But one, the things that I love about Seattle that I think Houston doesn't have is, for one, like the nature and the weather. When it's not raining, even when it is raining, because Houston and Texas is like torrential rain. Like, it's not even about whether you need a raincoat. Like, you're going to need an umbrella that's like reinforced.
A real cover.
You're going to really need to stay inside because it's going to flood and you're not going to be all right. And here, the weather is amazing. It's beautiful, especially like right now, like spring coming into summer. There's just something about it. Like, I understand it. There's this thing too here, like that we call like, well, my friends and I call like sun guilt. And that's when it's sunny outside, you don't go outside. Like, everyone is outside when it's sunny because it's like a holiday. And I would also say, like, I was kind of confused when I first came. Like, I wanted to find out, like, what is the culture of Seattle? Like, it's a little bit ambiguous, but there is a culture here and there's so much to do and the people are so interesting. And actually, Seattle has made me dream like bigger. I think I had like a small town kind of mindset living in Houston, even though Houston's not small, but where I lived was like in the burbs. So now being in the city and just being around so many people who, you know, a lot of immigrants and people who follow their dream or like, you know, second generation, it's just been really motivating. But the West Coast is definitely different than South. And there's no crawfish here. And if there are some, I'm not eating it. And that's fine with me.
Yeah, you're definitely from the South.
Yeah. Where are you guys from?
I'm originally from Mississippi, but I live in Austin.
Okay, I love Austin.
Yeah.
I grew up in Omaha.
Okay, Nebraska.
Yeah, now I'm in Boston. So when you were talking about the difference and you felt like people in Houston were nicer, when I went out to Seattle, I was joking with my wife that was the first time someone had held a door open for me when I was a little ways away, like walking up, just because the like going from Boston to Seattle, it's like, oh my God, these people are so nice here.
Yeah.
your initial impression is interesting based on your previous experience, I think.
Mm-hmm. Southern hospitality is just a different kind of thing. Like, I can't even describe it. Yeah. It's just people in the South, they're just really friendly and it's just interesting. Like, yeah. And I love it, to be honest. Like, I love it. I love going there and being like, you know, just having somebody just randomly spark a conversation with me and be like, you know, where'd you get your shoes from? And I'm like, let me tell you. Let me tell you. And we'll have a whole conversation in the grocery store. They don't do that here. Now I've actually acclimated to it. And somebody was trying to help me like pick out an outfit the other day at the store. And I shrunk up and I was like, oh my God, why are they talking to me? They're talking to me. What's going on? And normally I would be like, oh my gosh, yes, please help me. I love this. It's amazing.
So now you're acclimated to that lifestyle.
Oh, I am paying $10 for a small cup of coffee with macadamia milk. I have fully converted. Like, but I still blast Zero in my car as if everyone here knows, you know, Chopped and Screwed. So I still got my roots in me, but for sure had a matcha latte this morning. For sure.
You're weathered.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's get into a couple of other things. One thing that you mentioned is like you being very selective in freelance. In this, we get a little controversial on the show sometimes to kind of debunked or step into.
Okay.
So we live in a time now where, you know, people are wanting you to work 20 hours a day and halfway sleep and the other four sleep with one eye open and all around the clock, just work, 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 work. But you know,
I think there was a song about that.
You know, there's a famous artist that did that. Why have you chosen to be more selective and say, you know what, I'm going to protect my peace, my mind, all of that, instead of being, you know, that hustle and grind mentality that really leads to nothing but death? That sounded really dark, didn't it? Like, it leads to nothing but death.
Yeah, destruction, pain, suffering. I think I actually feel like the Seahawks helped me kind of unlearn that. I think that's something that you have to unlearn. It's the whole thing kind of circling back to direction mattering more than speed. I think there's also a conversation there around like boundaries. I think a lot of times people are uncomfortable setting boundaries because of the fallout or the reaction from the other person, but kind of understanding that like your responsibility is to yourself. And like we talked about, you are the work. So you are protecting the work, but by protecting the hands that are making it. And so I think what I really would love is for clients and employers to understand that by creating a space for artists and creative people to have rest is only going to make them better. So I think the conversation, I would love for it to be, you know, that artists can be less on the defense in this kind of situation consistently. But I do think that people will, you know, push you as far as you're willing to go. So I think it's all about setting those creative boundaries of like, hey, there are going to be a limited number of revisions on this. Or hey, I'm available from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. I will not be answering any calls or text messages after that. And I know that sounds crazy, but what I've learned is that the people that don't respect those boundaries are not people that I want to work with. Mm. They just aren't. I want to work with people who want to protect that and understand that I am a part of the work. So I need to protect, I need to create space for rest there. I know that there are always going to be situations where there's like rush requests and things like that. But when you're properly rested, when those things come and it is like there is no wiggle room, you've got the bandwidth to hit it. But it's not sustainable to constantly be in like a creative fight or flight. That's just not sustainable. You will burn out. And that's no good to you or the client. So boundaries are boundaries are for other people and they're also for ourselves.
Absolutely. So the other controversial topic around America, around the world, is on something that you are very passionate about, and that's DE&I, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. Let's take it back a couple years. The excitement around, you know, women in sports, and now we see, not sure if you watch women's basketball, but the excitement around, you know, that blowing up. Like, let's talk the good and the bad. Like, what's been good about seeing the rise of you know, women working in the NFL, women working in the NBA, women sports becoming popular, and how much work we have to do to move forward?
I love seeing it. It's amazing. I think it's long overdue. There's been so many goats, you know, before the Caitlin Clarks of the world, and there are going to be so many more after her because of her and because of other people who are supporting her. I think that women are just amazing. Like, women are amazing. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done to kind of dismantle and unlearn some of the things that we've carried on for far too long about what women are capable of, and giving them the spotlight that they deserve. Because one thing I've also learned, that being in the room doesn't always give you a voice either. So there's layers to it. But I'm really proud of like every woman who's been willing to be the first at something. It's really not fun to be the first. And being in these uncomfortable situations, like when I was working at the oil and gas company in Texas, I was, at one point there was one other Black woman that was working there, but I was the only Black person in the office for the majority of the time that I was there. And it was tough. Like, you know, in most spaces it's going to be tough, especially having like those layers of intersectionality on top of it. Cause you know, you might, how you present, Yeah. I even struggle with that to this day where I always make a joke where I'm like, you know, if I was just The Rock, if I was just a bald, strong man, and I said the same thing, how would that be received? So we've got a lot of work to do. It's something I'm still personally working through as well, just like how I continue to show up and making sure that my voice is heard, you know, even if I have to shout it out. And just getting that allyship. But I think men, you know, the whole thing about, I think that feminism that people don't understand is that it's like feminism at its root should be for men and women. So I think men should be supporting these things, you know, like pull up to a storm game, you know, tune in. Cause it's always fire. It is. Women are always doing fire things. Like when Gabby Douglas was having her moment, that was fire for the culture, you know? So, yeah.
When you were talking about being in the room doesn't guarantee you, or having a seat at the table doesn't guarantee you a voice at the table, how can that get improved? Obviously, raising your voice may or may not change anything.
Could make things worse.
Is it?
Yeah. I know. Yeah,
is it time? Is it trust? What do you think is at the root of that, and how can that evolve?
I think it comes down to like allyship and education. One thing I love a lot about the Seahawks and the fact that we have like this diversity, equity, inclusion department is that they actively work on like training people to understand their bias. People don't know that they bring so much bias to the table. The same way I bring all my experiences, like, you know, being from the South, having grown up in church and all these different things and all these different layers to my identity, people don't realize that they bring those with them to work. They think that they leave them outside, but they come in into the office with us, like a backpack. So I think education is the key. And I feel like, yeah, just utilizing the same way that people in the past used to weaponize race against other people, we can also flip that and use it to create space. I love it when I'm in a meeting and there's like a man in the room who sees I'm getting cut off and is like, hey, I actually think Donnie had something she wanted to share. Donnie, can you please share what you had to say? I love that. You know, that's just like an example of like the literal example of like when you're at the table, you want to have a voice. Yeah. And just like, I think mentorship too is really important. And that's something that I had to start pursuing this year. It was like, I need to find someone who looks like me. It's doing what I want to do. It's really important.
That is important. So we're going to pause and play a little game real quick. Okay. So as a designer, we're going to give you an opportunity to name some things. You will have 30 seconds to name your must-haves as a designer, like as many must-haves as possible, whether it's, you know, tools that you like, programs, whatever it is that is absolutely necessary for Donnie to be successful.
Okay.
Hold on. I'm going to pull up the clock. Stop. Here we go. All right. Ready? Go.
MacBook, Adobe Creative Cloud, Apple Mouse, therapy, mentor. Let me see. Pexels or Unsplash. What else do I like to use? The pen tool. Illustrator.
There you
cookies.
Go.
Cookies. Chocolate chip.
We'll throw the cookies in there. Cookies are essential.
Yeah, essential. You need a special treat.
Yeah, you gotta have that.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about mentoring. And needing that, right? Obviously, this podcast is we like it to, you know, focus on the stories of our guests, but also a chance to give back and give advice What's this is kind of a two part question. What is some advice that you would give little Donnie, as you know, in your younger life, and what's some advice that you would give to the next generation of people who are trying to get into this industry and start it on the path similar to yours, not just like.
I would say for younger Donnie, I would tell her to be more self-assured. I will say, like, I had some crazy faith for sure. I always talk about how I just knew I was going to be successful. It's really crazy. To this day, I still have that. I carry that with me. Like, I'm going to be a big deal. I know I will. And I always felt that way. But there's a lot of people who didn't think I would be. And they told me. And it really messed with me. It really bothered me when people told me you can't. And I would go back and try to think to myself, well, can I? And I always landed on the same in the same way. But I now wish if I could go back and just tell her what if only you knew what you would be doing. Like even now, like this particular week has been so overwhelming, the amount of like opportunities that I've been getting. It's really insane. I'm overflowing. I literally had to take a pause and like cry in the bathroom because I was so grateful. I was just like, what is happening in my life right now? So I wish I could tell her like, it's all happening. So just relax, keep doing what you're doing. And whoever says they can't do it is a projection of their own sense of self. They don't think they can do it. And who else said that? Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness. It always comes back to Will.
It's all about Will.
And what was the second half of that? I forgot.
So what's some advice that you would give to other creatives who are either on their pursuit of, you know, becoming a full-time designer or whatever creative, or has started in this industry and is, you know, maybe looking for what's next for them?
I would say just be relentless and just like, don't ever stop. Like whatever, like don't ever stop and just be tapped into like who you are and figuring out your why. Figure out why and then be relentless to it. And I you can find, like, I'm a metaphor girl, and I like to think of it as like a samurai, like sharpening their sword. I'm going to stay at the thing, sharpening the sword. And sometimes sharpening the sword may look like rest when your friends want to go out, or sharpening the sword may look like reaching out to that person that you think would never respond to you when you need mentorship or you want advice. Or it might look like, you know, saying no to a project that pays a lot, but it's not aligned with who you are as a person. But whatever it is, you're getting that sword ready because you've got some things you need to cut. You got some things you got to do. And being like very intentional. I think those are the things, like be relentless, be intentional, sharpen your sword.
Some great advice. Also have one more controversial topic. I love doing this with our design guests because I think that it's funny, but I also think that it's kind of weird. On the X app or Twitter or, you know, whatever platform, design Twitter.
Yes.
And the fiascos that happen in design Twitter. What are your takes on that? And how can the relationships get better in the design community to be more supportive and open to, you know, influence of designs and all that?
I don't know. I think you might have to spill the tea for me because I don't think I'm tapped into the Twitter / X, you know, beef.
Yeah.
I'm a little detached. I think I treat my social media like my portfolio, to be honest with you. Like I treat it like, if anybody looks up my name, they're going to find this. I'm showing them who I am. So I go on the app. I go on any of the apps that I use for like my personal branding is like just that. And when I get on there, I'm usually, if I'm scrolling through the timeline, I'm on there for maybe 5 minutes tops. And I'm just liking things and telling people that they're amazing. So I think people should do more of that.
Yeah.
Just get on the app, support other people, get off, drop your thing, get your likes and dip. But what's going on? What are the girls beefing about?
Oh, it's not just girls. It's all kinds
I'm sorry. I meant the girls, the proverbial girls.
Gotcha. A lot of it is the, you know, hey, you stole my design, or I don't like this, or it's design Twitter is not as supportive outside looking in. Maybe it's inside looking in as well. You just have a lot of that from a lot of younger creatives not understanding that no idea is a new idea most times, mm-hmm. right? And understanding that if you, in video world, if I see Justin did a video and I try to, I find inspiration in that, it's easier to hide in video, right? But mm-hmm. in graphic.
Well, just look at Austin Hiddle shooting from the roof, and now everybody absolutely wants to shoot from the roof, right?
And it's more of a, you know, being flattered and inspired by something. If you do that in design, it's a whole nother thing, right? And mm-hmm. some of that is intentional or unintentional, because you cannot literally be halfway influenced without it being a complete ripoff in some of that. So that's a lot of what happens. But you did bring mm-hmm. up a good piece about the personal branding portion of it, because a lot of times now, to also go back to design Twitter and social design space, is the importance or lack thereof of the personal brand and portfolios and people pushing their brands, you know, more than the actual person or team or corporation that employs them and pays them. Like, what are your thoughts on, should you lead with your personal brand, or should you kind of coincide?
I think that people feel more comfortable pouring themselves into a brand because it's a distraction from themselves. And I had to meet myself where I was and say, what am I pouring into myself? How am I representing myself? I represent these brands that I work for and these people that I freelance for really well, but who am I, and how do I show up in these spaces? And so when I started to really just take ownership of who I am, and I think personal branding is something that's so, what I didn't anticipate about that is, again, it all leads back to, you know, dealing with yourself, because you have to identify who you are and how you want to be perceived. What do you want people to say about you when you're not in the room? So I had to kind of sit down and really think about that, which is really daunting at first, but it was a really fun challenge. It's something I'm still actively developing and working on, but I encourage everyone to do it. I love representing the organization that I work for, because they are so phenomenal and amazing. But I also feel I also want to represent myself well. And I think you can do those two things, hold those two things at the same time. I don't think they compete with each other.
Well, Donnie, we...
Hold on.
Oh, Justin.
Can I ask?
Absolutely. You can have as many as you want.
I've had it, and I've been trying to figure out where to ask it. You've talked a lot about putting yourself in the work, and that's what makes your work. And you feel like you're the work is better because you put yourself into it, which I 100% agree with. I am curious your thoughts on feedback and not taking it personally and how you approach that, because I think that is the push and pull that we deal with as creatives, is that if we put ourselves into it, we feel like the feedback can be personal. Mm-hmm. So how do you separate that?
I think it depends. I think this is like a project by project basis. I think when I talk about the work and ourselves being the work is when I'm thinking of more passion projects, stuff that really makes a difference. But when I'm making a 300 by 250 ad for, you know, tickets.
Yeah.
I'm not putting myself in that. You know what I mean? I'm not really putting myself in that. So I think finding what should and should not be taken personally, being able to prioritize what requires you to be in it for it to be successful, Because then we have brand guidelines for a reason. And then the other thing is, like, I really feel like what I have cultivated over the last year is wanting people's feedback to be informed by the role that they play. And when it doesn't, being able to advocate for your art or advocate for what you're creating. So if, let's say, I'm getting some feedback from, like, someone in who has a role that's in social, they're saying, hey, could you please change this to blue? I think it looks better in blue. That is their personal opinion. So I am now receiving that in a personal way, like, or not necessarily, but just, it's a personal opinion. But it's different if they were to give feedback and say, blue performs really well on social. We get a lot of engagement when we see more blue. Could we have this change to blue? Now it's not personal. There, it's an informed decision and it's an informed piece of feedback. I think sometimes, like, designers, and this is really difficult. I think I'm talking at a level that, like, I know a younger designer is like, what do you mean I'm going to, but we have to kind of teach and coach people how to give feedback that we can receive. And I know it's kind of frustrating because you want people to just kind of know how to tell you what you need to do. But, like, I think providing that education, maybe in the form of, like, a recap after a project, like, let's say you just get the project over and done with. And then after, you say, you know, hey, like, let's talk about what was successful about this project, what was not, or not even what was not, but what kind of, using that language of, like, how can we grow from this? Where do we have opportunities to, like, expand? And you'd be like, you know, when you gave me the feedback about this being blue, it was really difficult for me to interpret the origin of that request. In the future, I'd love for you to inform, like, your feedback to be informed by your role, because my role is to make it look good. and I know.
Yeah, remove opinions, basically.
Yeah.
Focus on what moves the needle. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's hard not to take something personally when it's when someone is giving you their personal opinion, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like this. And it's like, okay, but is it successful towards the goal that we're trying to hit? Because that's really the answer I need in a corporate space, at least.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to touch on that we didn't touch on? I feel like we ran quite a few different lanes there, which was awesome.
I have one thing.
Sure.
So I am actually going to be exhibiting for the first time at this gallery that I mentioned at the beginning of our call. But through working with this organization called Young Women Empowered, that essentially, like, creates this space for BIPOC youth in Seattle, I've been participating in their Create program/cohort. And that opportunity, like, opened up this gallery thing. And now I'm kind of taking design and putting it into, like, the fine art space. And so I'm kind of, like, stepping into that role. So it's, like, really exciting for me. It's also challenging me in a different way because it's out of my comfort zone. Like, fine art is completely different than corporate art. So I'm really excited about that. But I'm also really excited about more opportunities that can come from that. So, yeah, that's probably the other thing I would love to share, that I just am stepping into that space, and there's going to be more that people can find across my social media, Donnie Brock_PSD or Donnie Brock or Donnie_PSD on all my platforms, sharing my journey, sharing the process, and just kind of giving people, like, an inside look into what my day-to-day looks like as a sports designer, because I think it's a little bit gatekept, you know?
So that's you putting yourself in the work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's like me. Yeah. And I'm like creating space for myself to, like, make things for the sake, like, art for art's sake again. Cause I think when you work creatively for people so much, you don't make stuff for yourself anymore. And I think that that's still important, like, making the time to do that. But it's like part of the practice of creativity, cause you have to actually intentionally carve out time, cause it doesn't just happen.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you get started with that project?
So essentially, like, the gallery, working with this organization, they let us know that they were going to have some spots for us to be able to submit, myself and some of the students that I've been working with. And so I was a little intimidated by it at first. I think I had a little bit of imposter syndrome just about, you know, like I said, having worked in such a corporate space so long, I was like, can I? But I could. So yeah, I've been painting and drawing, and also making digital art. And those pieces are going to be, in the gallery. I have three pieces that'll be up for sale, starting this tomorrow, actually on Saturday, the May 11th. But yeah, I've been making stuff like a little bit in the background, but I definitely slowed down when I started working, in football, because I just felt like I don't have the space. But now that I've learned how to kind of manage my energy, I've made space where there was none.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.